ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 9. Detachment from all that is material. Text 20. Text 20. Tamahu Sri Guna Vyakim.
Tamahu Sri Guna Vyakim.
Sri Jantim Vishvatomukam.
Sri Jantim Vishvatomukam.
Jasmin Trotam Idam Vishvam.
Jasmin Trotam Idam Vishvam.
Jena Sansara Te Puman.
Jena Sansara Te Puman.
Tam.
Tam.
The Mahatattva.
The Mahatattva.
Ahu.
Ahu.
They say.
They say.
Triguna.
Triguna.
The three modes of material nature.
The three modes of material nature.
Vyaktim,
Vyaktim,
manifesting as the cause.
Manifesting as the cause.
Sri Jantim,
Sri Jantim,
creating.
Creating.
Vishvatamukam,
Vishvatamukam,
many different categories of cosmic manifestation.
Many different categories of cosmic manifestation.
Yasmin,
Yasmin,
within the Mahatattva.
Within the Mahatattva.
Trotam,
Trotam,
strung and bound.
Idam,
Idam,
this,
Vishvam,
Vishvam,
universe,
universe.
Jena,
Jena,
by which, Samsarate,
Samsarate,
undergoes material existence,
undergoes material
existence.
Puman,
Puman,
the living being,
Translation by Srila Prabhupada, by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. According to great sages, that which is the basis of the three modes of material nature and which manifests the variegated universe is called the Sutra or Mahatattva. Indeed, this universe is resting within that Mahatattva, and due to its potency, the living entity undergoes material existence. So please repeat. According to great sages,
that which is the basis
of the three modes of material nature and which manifests the variegated universes is called the Sutra or Mahatattva.
Indeed, this universe is resting
within that Mahatattva.
And due to its potency,
the living entity undergoes material existence. Interesting use of the word sutra. Maybe we can discuss that later. Purport. The cosmic manifestation is a reality. We often say illusion, isn't it? The cosmic manifestation is a reality because illusion is a form of reality also because it exists. So anyway, the cosmic manifestation is a reality because it emanates from the supreme reality, the personality of Godhead. The material world, however, is temporary and full of problems. The conditioned soul foolishly tries to become the lord of this inferior creation and become separated from his real friend, the Supreme Lord. In this state, his only business is material sense gratification, and his real knowledge is lost. Namaha. presentation that John is in. Okay. So here, who's the great sages they're speaking? I'm not overly familiar with this section of the Bhagavatam, so please excuse me. But the great sages are speaking and advising. Is it, are they speaking to Dattatreya Muni? Is that?
Dattatreya
is speaking. So when they say the sages here, is that Dattatreya or Dattatreya is telling that other sages are speaking? Yeah, okay. So he's. As when we speak, we always reference previous acharyas and scriptures and so on. We don't speculate any nonsense, is it? Just like when we sit here, this is called the seat of Vyasadeva. So it's not that Birbhadra can sit up here and speak, you know, the Birbhadra Shastra. Right? We speak on the basis of Vyasadeva, on the basis of the previous acharyas, because we come in Srila Prabhupada's line, we speak from Srila Prabhupada and his disciples' teachings like that, and through the disciple succession. And in this way, we represent Srila Vyasadeva. So just here we see Dattatreya is speaking to. Who's he speaking to? Somebody help me. King Yadu? King, is it King Yadu? Okay. Sorry, you guys have been back here. I haven't. So anyway, when Dattatreya is speaking, he's also referencing the sages. So he's saying, when he speaks here, he says, Ahush, referring to the other great sages. So according to great sages, he says like that. So this legitimizes or qualifies what he's saying. It's not just, you know, we can go on the street and we hear people talking so much stuff, you know, so many opinions and whatever. You know, we go to work and they'll be talking about the football game on the weekend or the swine flu that's going around or whatever the latest stuff is that's going around in the ether, you know, the Qatar, the Gramya Qatar that is going around the village. And we can hear so much stuff and everybody has their opinion on that. Of course, according to Prabhupada, opinions are as common as backsides. Everybody has one. Prabhupada said this one time. Anyway, so we speak not on our own opinion. Prabhupada said, as soon as somebody says, in my opinion, of course in Gita Krishna says, in my opinion, like this. So Krishna can say that because he is the source. But as soon as I say, in my opinion, Prabhupada says, shove that in the closet. You know, so the authority is, he's speaking from referencing other sages. That's not like that. Anyway. So, that which is the basis of the mode of the three modes of material nature and which manifests the variegated universe. Because we shouldn't be so naive to think that, you know, only my universe exists. Here am I, you know, Birbhadra, some little guy, and I might think so much of myself. Prabhupada actually said this to something like this. I think it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Yeah, he was the GB, he was Prabhupada's secretary in India or something like that at the time. And he said, so Krishna's creation is very big, but here is one, I'm pretty sure it's Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Here is one Tamal Krishna, and he is thinking that he is such a big man. Like that, but you know, he's just one little guy in one little town, in one little country, in one little planet, in one little universe, amongst many, many, many thousands, unlimited countless universes. So Krishna's creation, you know, is not limited to what we can perceive. Therefore, the efforts of the scientists who don't have godly vision, their ability to measure and comprehend the creation it has, you know, very limited capacity. So they might be able to see, oh yeah, there's some atoms banging around and doing this and doing that. But it's a very minute picture of what's really going on. So there's many variegated universes. And like when Bhakti Swarup Damodar was discussing much of this with Prabhupada on Venice Beach, which later became the book Life Comes From Life. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that book, Life Comes From Life. So so whenever Prabhupada's disciple, Bhakti Swarup Damodar, would present the scientific, the current scientific ideas or what, the scientific ideas of the creation were, and he might talk about, they might talk about some inert lump of matter, right? So we know from Shastra that the inert state of matter is called the pradhan, right? I think that's mentioned previously. Is it pradhan that's discussed in some previous verses? So the pradhan is that unmanifested state of material energy, that inert state. It is. So the scientists sometimes talk about, like matter being so heavily condensed, and it condenses so heavily that eventually it implodes, and so they get this idea of how material creation takes place. The Prabhupada would always say, but where did that matter come from? Or what is the energy causing it to implode and manifest? What creates, if it is a Big Bang, what creates the Big Bang? So this they don't know, right? Because, relying on their own limited senses, how can they comprehend which is so much beyond? Prabhupada gave the example of, he called this actually frog philosophy. This idea of from your own puny, puny little position. Did I read the purport?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Sorry for that. So from our own puny, puny little position, trying to understand something which is way, way, way beyond our comprehension. So Dr. Frog, he lived in his little well. Might have been a bit bigger than this, but little frog in a little pond of water. And that was his world. Just like, we live here and, okay, Melbourne, goes out so far. Many of us have been to Bamber and back at the weekend, so this far. Some of us have come from other countries, so a bit further out. But, and even within that realm of experience, how much do we actually know about where we've come from and where we are and where we've been? In the meantime, how much do we really know? Anybody want to say?
Insignificant.
Thank you. It is insignificant. And why is our knowledge insignificant? Because I am insignificant. We are, in one sense, on the basis of false ego, we are insignificant. All these things that we think we are that we are not is insignificant. Limited capacity. So, how can we know? So the frog, he's in his little well. And another frog comes by. It's like Prabhupada came and he told us all about Braj, about Goloka Vrindavan. And how can we know about that? Oh, is it like this? Is it like that? And we try to understand it in terms of our experience. Right? We cannot understand like that. So certainly when this frog came to visit Professor Croak, the frog in his well, he said, oh, I've just been to the Pacific Ocean. It's a huge body of water. Huge. And meanwhile, Professor Croak was thinking, his well was pretty big. Just like, we might think, well, I've got a pretty good house. I've got big electric oven and gas hopper, nice kitchen, all fully decked out, and I've got a pool in the backyard, and, nice and big plasma screen in my cinema room. And so, or not, we might just have You know, a simple house. But we think our house is pretty good, you know, it works for us, whatever it is. So Professor Crikey's thinking his well is pretty good. You know, and he was the big time professor in that well. Had all, you know, taught all the other little froggies, toads and tadpoles and whatever. And he was the big man there. And his other frogs said, bigger, is it as bigger? So is it as big as my well? He says to his other friend that comes back from the Pacific Ocean. Is it as big as? No, no, much, much, much bigger. Well, you know, twice as big. And in this way, because he had like a high estimation of himself, because he was Doctor, you know, Professor Croak, you know, he was the big time. So in this way, he sort of inflated himself. Well, is it this big? Is it this big? And he's just trying to measure it in terms of his own limited experience. So eventually, you know, frogs. So eventually, you know, is it this big? You know, and he's just like inflating his ego like that. And eventually, croaks it. You know, he just explodes. So this is the mundane scientists. They inflate their own estimation of their perception of the universe or whatever. Some of you may be scientists working, I don't know. So how can we understand? Many, many variegated universes. So here in the translation. So the word actually in the text is proton. Anybody remember what proton? Or no?
Strong and bound.
Yeah. So are we familiar with this word anywhere else? That's not that verse. In the Bhagavad Gita. Because here it says strong and bound, and when this word appears in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Prabhupada gives it as just is strong. Mai shivam idam protam sutre mani gana eva. So he's describing that that how everything rests upon me like pearls strung on a thread, just like we have. Someone here, I've got some beads, so I've got my beads in this. What's holding, you know, the beads aren't just sitting there around my neck because I want to wear, you know, kunti mala on my neck. It needs support. There's something supporting it, right? There's the little nylon thread in there that's holding it together. So in terms of the universe, that thread, according to the Gita, Krishna says, "Mai savamidam protam sutre mani." That thread is me. Everything is resting on me, like the pearls on the thread. So certainly we're getting this example here is being given also. That the Mahatattva is called the Sutra or Mahatattva. So in yesterday's purport, we got class yesterday. Somebody here? Yeah. The word Sutram indicates the Mahatattva on which many material creations rest. So Sutra, Taya Sutram Arindava. That energy, the Mahatattva Sutra. So that energy, that is Krishna, right? That is Krishna's energy, right? The Mahatattva is an energy of Krishna. There is nothing existing outside of Krishna. Prabhupada mentions, is mentioned in the first line of the purport. It is reality. We talk about reality and truth sometimes synonymously. So it is reality. It is true. It is real because it emanates from the supreme reality. I remember when I just started coming to the temple and I was chanting and whatever. I hadn't moved in as yet at this time, but I went up to visit Govardhan. I actually joined here in Melbourne. I went up to this my term break from RMIT where I was studying, and I went up to Govardhan and Sydney on the way. And on my way back, I called in at Sydney Temple and I stayed the night there on my way back. And a couple of devotees, they were going out to Goulburn to do something, so they gave me a ride to Goulburn. But on the way, they played this game. It's useful. We just open a book, and first word we saw, not just an and or that or whatever, but a first, you know, meaningful word we saw, we picked that word, and then we had to speak for a minute on that word. So I opened, I think it was the issue of Upanishad or something like that, or truth. So, okay, Dr. Phil, speak about truth. So then I talked about the difference between absolute truth and relative truth, and, you know, went on for my minute's worth of immature, unrealized, speculative, neophyte, whatever stuff. And, you know, I thought it was pretty good, you know, I thought I had the difference, you know, between absolute truth and relative truth. The absolute truth is real and eternal, you know, and all relative truth is just illusory, doesn't exist, it's not. And some of you will know Kaliya Krishna at Kola River. He was in the car, and Madhu Mangala was the other one. So, and Kaliya just said to me, "No, the relative truth is also true. It has a, you know, like that." So, because it is coming from Krishna, it has a, it's temporary, but it is also truth. It is not untrue. It exists, just like, you know, this wood here that we're sitting on. It is true. Otherwise, it's real. Otherwise, you know, I don't have the yogic power of levitation. I'm not just sitting here floating. Right? I'm not just sitting here floating. It is real. It has a reality. Otherwise, how could it support me? Right? But it won't last forever. Just like this body that is being supported by it also won't last forever. But it has a truth that is true for some time. And that energy, it goes through various, that energy that makes up this body or makes up this wood, it goes through various transformations and periods of manifestation and unmanifestation. Just like we know the material energy is sometimes avyakta and sometimes vyakta. It's sometimes unmanifest and sometimes manifest. It's like, so in the unmanifest state, or the inert state, or, you know, the neutral state, that state of what's referred to here sometimes as equilibrium, where it's just balanced and just sitting there, nothing happening. That is called the pradhan, and that is the withdrawn form of the material energy within the body of Mahavishnu, like that. Yeah? And then when that same energy manifests as the Mahatattva, it becomes active and variegated, right? And supports, as it says here, jena samsarate puman, by the potency, you know, of that Mahatattva, that energy, the living entity undergoes material existence. Samsara, here we have it in the samsarate, undergoes material existence. So that material existence is cyclic. You know, we're born, we die. We're born, we produce byproducts, that's six transformations like that. So this is samsara. So this is facilitated by the material energy. If the material energy wasn't there, if the material energy wasn't acting on us, how could we experience any life? How could we actually do or achieve anything? Yayate dayate jagat. You know, by the resources of the material energy, we are pursuing so many different desires and exploiting those resources. And because we are motivated from ahankara with so many desires and everything, we are exploiting that material energy for our own end. Right? And that binds us, this material energy, this sutra, just like we said. It is both the thread on everything which it rests, this proton, the string, is both the thread on which everything exists and is supported, but it is also binding. Yeah? In this verse here, we get that binding concept of the material energy. So we're being bound up like that. So this is our condition. Because we don't actually know what's going on, you know. We're just like Professor Croak, you know, our, with our limited intellectual capacity, our limited appreciation and realization of what this material energy is. Yeah? So how will we know? How will we get beyond it? The conditioned soul foolishly tries to become the lord of this inferior creation. This material world is temporary and full of problems. It is binding us. And because, and in that bound state, seeking material sense gratification, our real knowledge is lost. Because it's, in another sense, the Gita tells us, because the real position of the living entity is his spirit soul, right? He's a spirit soul and he's transmigrating, shifting through different bodies, different material situations. But not understanding this, we're in illusion. The illusion means, that you have a false conception of what the reality is. The reality exists, but somehow or other you're seeing dust on the mirror. You're not seeing the real face of your soul, yourself. So, so how we come to know that, and mercifully, the sloka writer has given a clue here, a reference here, mameva je papadyante mayamitam tarantite. Does he always do that? Give you a clue? He's clever, huh? Good. Who knows this verse? Somebody must know it. At least the sloka writer must know it. He's not here though. Oh yes, he is. Somebody must know this verse? You want to share? Prabhu? You know it? You don't know it. I thought you said you know it. Somebody must know it. Mataji? Yes. So just like this vast material world, we had the example yesterday, is compared to when we actually surrender to Krishna, when we actually know this vast ocean of material existence, which is the Rakyaya. From our conditioned state, it's impossible, it's so vast. And when we begin to understand where we fit in the scheme of things, it just seems so insurmountable, isn't it? Duratyaya. It's impossible. But when we actually take shelter of the source of that material energy, the proprietor of that material energy, the one who's sustaining and maintaining and from whom it all comes and who all activity is generated, we take shelter of him and we see that actually this whole vast material energy with its many, many, many variegated universes and manifestations compared to the spiritual reality is Vachyapadam. Anybody at the farm remember, at the retreat, remember what Vachyapadam? What's on my note? Vachyapadam means? Calf's hoofprint. But the impression of a calf's hoofprint in the ground. So the vast material ocean, when we come in contact with the spiritual energy and identify with that and perceive ourselves in relation to that, by surrendering to the source of that energy, the Supreme Lord, and engaging in that whole material becomes as insignificant as Vatsapadam. And if we're walking across the field and there's many Vatsapadams there, where the calves have walked, we walk across the field and those little imprints, even though they may be full of water or whatever, they don't affect us. We can walk across the field and we don't fall in and drown. But right now, we might think, oh, I'm just drowning in the material ocean. Yeah? It's because it is so vast. It's so much bigger than my well. It's huge. I can't comprehend how vast it is. I can't swim across the other side. I just remembered Satchinandan Swami told a story one time. It was his introductory introduction at one Govardhan retreat some years ago. I've only heard it on recording, I haven't been there. But he said, he was describing how one time he was swimming in the Atlantic Ocean. And then the currents took him far, far out. You know, he was just having some health regeneration before coming to Govardhan to do the retreat and whatever. And so the current took him far, far out. And it was like, and he couldn't swim against it, you know, he was drifting further out, and he just thought, oh no, is my life going to end like this? I thought that I would be able to finish my life here in Vrindavan or something, in your land of Braj, O Krishna, like that. And so he started thinking like that. He's just like at the mercy of the ocean practically, so he's thinking like that. And the ocean is dragging him out. And he describes how, fortunately, he was remembering Krishna. He's going, oh, Krishna, you know, I didn't want my life to end like this. Please save me. I thought I could be... And I'm supposed to come to Braj next week to give the seminar, the retreats and everything. Please save me, otherwise the devotees will be... anyway, like that. He surrendered to Krishna, and then he got the intelligence how to go with the current and swim. Not against the current, but across the current. And he said it took him like, you know, some 30 minutes or more to get back onto the beach, and he was exhausted, but, you know. But anyway, so the ocean, you know, it can overcome us. Like where I live on the coast at Kingscliff, the cross currents are fairly strong. You go swimming there. So we have to be careful. And this is just one little puddle of water in the vast material existence. Yeah? So, Krishna is actually the source of everything. So what do we do? So he's supporting us. And so just like, you know, I've talked about sitting on this Vyasasana. Also, like in the, I think it's in the Pancharatrika Pradeep. It describes that when you first get up in the morning and you first put your right foot down on the right side of your... Anyway, there's so many principles that we can follow in terms to bring us from our conditioned state where we're thinking of Krishna. So there's a prayer that it says that you can say, like the Archana Padati, sort of the whole range of ritualistic prayers and offerings you can make to regulate yourself and put yourself in good consciousness. So it's described there, a prayer that as you step out of bed and you put your foot down, then you say a mantra to Mother Bhumi, appreciating her for the support that she's giving you. Because if Mother Bhumi wasn't there, you know, we'd be suspended in space again, like I said before. We'd have nowhere to stand. So Mother Bhumi is, you know, Krishna's creation is so comprehensive. It is perfect and complete. It is puna, right? Everything is there to sustain and nurture us. Krishna as the Supreme Father is providing for all his offspring, which is us, which is these other energies as well, are coming from Krishna. It's all Krishna's offspring. So just like we put our foot down and we appreciate Mother Earth, Bhumi. But Krishna also says, Bhumi, Krishna says, that Bhumi, that is him, is coming from him. We're seeing here also. It's Mahatapa, it's Krishna's energy. It's coming. So the reality of it is, we might think, oh yes, concrete, marble, that'll hold me. I can walk on that. I go out on the water, no, that won't hold me. I can't walk on that. Right? I'm not a yogi. I'm not like Jesus or whatever. I can walk on water. Yeah? But this will hold me up. So I might think like that, this will hold me. But the reality is that is Mother Bhumi, Devi, servant of Krishna. And actually the Bhumi energy is coming from Krishna. Bhumi Devi, Bhumi Ma is simply Krishna's servant, and in her service is maintaining and looking after that energy for Krishna so that we have something to stand on and be nourished by, because the earth provides us in so many ways. So we put our foot down so we can appreciate that Bhumi is there supporting us, but that Bhumi is actually Krishna, because in Gita he says, Bhumi, I am that earth energy. Right? He describes his eight separated material energies. It is separated and given to the care of Bhumi Ma, and sustains and nurtures us in so many ways. Just as Govardhan Hill sustains and nurtures the residents of Braj in so many ways. Provides places for their pastimes and activities, provides water for their refreshment, flowers and places for the animals and so on. We read those descriptions of Govardhan. So Bhumi is similarly for us. Everything here is like an inferior, perverted reflection of that ultimate reality in the spiritual realm. There's not a lot of difference, it's just a difference in perspective. So we can appreciate, Krishna is my support. Krishna is the sutra on which I'm rested, I'm supported. Right? So in this way, we have to appreciate how is Krishna. So there's one thing that Mataji mentioned yesterday, like all this information is there in Gita. And she mentioned that sometimes the Rasika devotees, they think, oh, the Gita is just Krishna's opulence, Aishvarya, right? And then the chapter that contains the Chaturshloki Gita is actually called the opulence of the Absolute. And all these ways, there's so many ways that we can think of Krishna, Sarasam Sagara. If I go in the ocean, I can think Aham Sarasam Sagara. That, Krishna, you are this vast body of water. Or, Bhumi Apanalo, Krishna is all these material elements. So many different things, light of the sun and the moon. We can learn like that, how to appreciate different Krishna's manifest material energy. Like that. That it is coming from him. It is his energy. He tells us directly. But it is not directly his pastimes, intimate pastimes, right? And therefore, we get from our conditioned state, we get so many rituals and regulations to follow, which enable us to learn all this and actually get some perspective and realization of our relationship with Krishna and how we can serve him and how we can, surrender to him and easily deal with his material energy. And ultimately appreciate that it is his energy meant for his service, not our energy meant for our exploitation and sense gratification. So all these rituals and that are given, all these prescriptions are given to train us and to recondition us to our original condition. To our original state of being. So I was thinking after Mataji said that about how, some people they sort of tend to overlook Bhagavad Gita and these other fundamental scriptures which describe the different opulences of Krishna. But I was reflecting that when you actually read some of the Rasika texts, which describe the mood of the residents of Braj, for example, when some residents they see the cowherd boys engaging with Krishna or the gopis or this and that, and they immediately think, oh, what rituals, austerities, regulations did they follow in a previous life to be in this condition, right? It's not that they're there with Krishna. So it's important. And even to the residents of Braj, they think, even though they're totally focused on Krishna, when they see the devotees closer to Krishna than they are, they're immediately thinking, oh, what great rituals, what penances, what have they done in previous lives to be there? Right? So it's not to be overlooked. It is the basis. And that basis is the thread on which our sadhana rests, on which our... Vaidhi rests on that, and then as Vaidhi progresses to Raghunuga, that also rests, because without that you can't achieve that. You won't maintain that, because that's what it's all based on. And as we heard, like the basic principle of chanting, For a Vaidhi Bhakta, oh, we have to say, I have to do this. You know, I made my vow, I will chant, you know, so many rounds, or, you know, Shastra says I should chant Hare Krishna in a regulated way. I have to do this. Oh, I have to do this. Do I really have to do this? Yes, I have to do this. Right? It's like it's sometimes a difficulty to remind ourselves and to push ourselves, oh, I have to do this. You know, I have to chant Hare Krishna. I have to come and do my seva to the deity, or in the kitchen, or sweep the courtyard, or clean the pots, whatever. I have to do this. We push ourselves because a sense of duty, we have to do it. Whereas when in the developed stage, it's, there's not enough for me to do. What can I do next? You know, it's like the chanting, it's difficult to stop. You know, Rupa Goswami advised us, you know, that chanting constantly. Kalam nayed ikyat. Kalam nayed akalam ityupadesha saram. This is the essence of all advice, you know. Constantly. You know, chanting the name. Tanama rupa charitari sukitana smityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja. Tistam praje tarana ragi jananagami kalam nayed. Akilam iti padesha saram. The essence of all advice. You know, chanting Krishna's name, remembering his pastimes, just talking about his qualities and characteristics like that. And how do we do this? Tistam braje tadanuragi jananugam. By following in the footsteps of those who are doing it. So when we see those who are doing it, and then they see others who are doing it, they say, oh, what great austerities and penances have they performed before? Just like one story that comes to mind. The gopis, they're looking at Krishna. They're sort of a little bit, but they're looking at Krishna longingly. And we can look at Balabha. And they're looking at his red lotus lips and thinking how tasty and relishable it would be, like the bimba foods. And then they see Krishna take the bamboo flute from his belt and he's bringing it to his mouth, and they're thinking, oh, he's getting closer to his lips, like that, those lips that I'm longing for. And then they see actually Krishna, you know, caress that flute with his lips and, you know, make so many sweet, sweet notes like that, right? And they think, oh. And what do they think of the flute? They're thinking, what austerities has that bamboo performed to be there, so intimately engaged with Krishna? What austerities has he performed like that? So afterwards, when Krishna has finished his sweet flute song, and they go to the flute and they ask him, so how is it? You know, we are the damsels of Braj, the most beautiful girls. You know, we are longing to be kissed by Krishna's sweet bimba fruit tasty lips. And yet, you know, you are there, a piece of dry wood. How is it that he is so attracted to you? What austerities have you performed? What austerities? What have you done? What sadhana, what have you done to get to this position? Anybody know what austerities the fruit did to get there? So he goes, first of all, I was taken away from my mother and father and cast into the river. And I had to take shelter in the muddy earth at the bottom of the river. And then somehow or other I grew up of that into a bamboo rod. So here I am in the water like that, without my parents. And then somebody came and hacked me off at the bottom, cut me. And then they, with an iron rod, they hollow out my inside and make holes in me like this. These austerities I had to undergo like that. So it's not that we instantly jump like that. There's a process. There's a process. And even in Braj, they appreciate that. That, you know, for those who have attained Krishna, who are that intimately associated in Krishna's service, you know, they have gone through the Vaidhi process. They have performed. They must have performed. Of course, they are the eternal associates. But, you know, even when they see, they say, oh, they must have performed like that. So that instruction is there for us. So in order to come to Krishna, you know, we have to reconnect. And from the conditioned state, there is a gradual process of reconnecting. And just like Krishna reveals himself to us gradually as we surrender to him. So when those who know, like Aham Savasya Prabhava Nata Savam Prabhatate, what's the other part? Say it clearly. Iti Matva Bhajante Mam? Buddha Bhava Samamhita. Right? So what is that? So first of all, Krishna tells us, just like we're learning here, that Krishna, you know, everything is actually coming from, you know, all spiritual material worlds emanate from me. Everything rests on me, does he say that? Everything is coming from me. And the wise who know this, what do? Worship me with Buddha Bhava. Bhava, Samandita. Bhava means from the heart, within their heart. So that sentiment you have in your heart, that is your bhava. And then a couple of verses later, you know, Krishna describes Atma Bhavastha. That in order to enlighten them, Jnana Dipena Bhasvata, in order to enlighten them, he enters within their heart. So first of all, we have to know, oh, who is the source of all material worlds? Oh, it's the same who is the source of all the spiritual worlds. Also, everything. Sarva Karana Karana. Yeah? Everything comes from Ishvara Parama Krishna, the Supreme Lord Krishna. So when we know this, then we engage in his service with all our hearts. Not, oh, okay, yeah, I come and do it. When we actually know, initially we come a little bit, and by that process Krishna gradually reveals, because if Krishna revealed himself totally, just like we come here and we can look at Krishna, and what do we see? Honestly, what do we see? Well, it looks pretty nice, you know, it's some gorgeous sparkling cloth with some jewels, and I guess they're stone statues like that, you know, this is what my eyes, the information my eyes are telling me, right? But the realized devotee, he is seeing, you know, like Krishna dancing with Radharani, and she's, you know, offering there, or, you know, going into it. So, like, you know, depending on what we see, is how, and we can't see with our own eyes. We can't see Krishna with our own eyes. Krishna reveals himself to us by entering into our hearts. So our eyes, because we're in conditioned state, so we have to become purified gradually, and Krishna gradually reveals himself. So in some ways we can appreciate, oh, this is a representation form of Krishna made, and Krishna in Shastras describe, you can do like that. We talked about prescribed rituals and processes and so on. So Shastra describes how we can make a deity, how we should look, etc. like that, and then describes how we should attend to that deity, worship in different ways, and dress and feed and so on. And in this way we develop a personal appreciation, and through that service Krishna gradually reveals. He doesn't reveal himself, ta-da, here I am, here's the whole show, you know, because we can't see that. Actually, if Krishna did that to us at this stage, just like even to show the universal form, Krishna had to give Arjuna appropriate eyes. You have to give Arjuna appropriate eyes like that to see the universal form. So to see, we have to develop our vision, and we develop that through a prescribed process, and it's gradual, because our heart is millions and millions and millions of lifetimes. You know, jena samsara te pumam. We've been going round and round and round in this life. conditioned under the influence of the material energy. And so that, and in that condition, we develop concepts of who, various concepts of who we are. We identify with what we associate with, and if in our consciousness we're associating with matter and identify, you go to counselling sessions and they talk about family of origin and so on like that, So, if I identify with my family and so on in this way, I think, I was born in this family in this country, so I am Australian. My ancestors came out from England, 150 years ago or whatever, whatever. And I grew up in this family, I went to this school, I had these friends. I did this course, so now I'm this architect, I do this work, this type of architecture, working with these people. I follow this football team and I listen to this music and I like that rock star. And in so many ways, we think of ourselves and we identify and we connect with different people. Or we come to the temple, we come to the associated devotees and we identify with the devotees and we think, I'm Krishna's servant and these are all, the people who are helping me in that service. And we develop a different consciousness, a different conception of who we are. We develop a whole different set of upadis, the things that we attach ourselves to and identify with. And by that development of consciousness, Krishna reciprocates. Jayata prapajante. As they surrender to me, I reveal myself accordingly. So he either reveals himself in the material energy, because it is all coming from Krishna, it's the first line of the purport, that everything is emanating from Krishna. So Krishna reveals himself in different ways. So either a material condition and we're covered over in that inferior conception of self, or Krishna reveals himself and we see ourselves as his servant and we engage in that way. So obviously, that is the condition. So we've become separated from our real friend. In this state, our only business is material sense gratification, our real knowledge is lost. But the point is to come to real knowledge and surrender to Krishna, and then we can appreciate and understand. So I'll just read the verse again. According to great sages, that which is the basis of the three modes of material nature and which manifests the variegated universe is called Dhisutra or Mahatattva. Indeed, this universe is resting within the Mahatattva, and due to its potency, the living entity undergoes material existence. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Does anybody have any comment or question?
Would you like to ask how we joined the Hare Krishna movement?
Would I like to tell how I joined the Hare Krishna movement?
How did you join it? How did you come to know? Did you see Prabhupada?
I didn't see Prabhupada, no. I saw Prabhupada's disciples. And just as Prabhupada is invested with the energy of his spiritual master, so his disciples are also invested with his energy. And because they're all devotees of Krishna and Mahaprabhu, they are invested with the potency of Mahaprabhu, so that somehow infected me. What do you really want to know? I walked in the door one day. Alright, short story. I met some devotees at a down-to-earth festival at Breadbow, maybe just after Prabhupada left, Christmas 77, New Year 78, that time. So I remember one devotee, Prahlad Bhakta. He said to me, we were just talking, I said I was from Melbourne, and he said, well, why don't you, because Breadbow is up just over the border in New South Wales, in the mountains. So he said, well, why don't you come back to Melbourne? We've got a bus, you can come back to Melbourne with us, come back to the temple at 197 Dang Street in Albert Park. He actually told me the address like that. I go, no, I've got to go and meet my friends, and so on I went. So, fast forward a couple of years later, I was going to uni at RMIT, and I just used to live over here on St Kilda Road. And I had a tough day at uni that day, I had to present. I wasn't a mainstream student. I was a little bit, so I was finding it a little difficult there in that association because I felt like it. So anyway, I came back after this presentation I had to do and I was feeling a bit low. And so I, from my flat there on St Kilda Road, I just went for a walk. And just as I was walking around Albert Park Lake there, I just started to think, oh, what am I doing? Where am I going? You know, feeling a bit down. And then suddenly, Prahlad Bhakta in my head, 197 Dank Street, Albert Park, Hare Krishna Temple. True story, right? That's how it happens. So it's just like, so Krishna within the heart, just at that moment, just like I was saying before, as we surrender, when we, so Krishna reveals accordingly. So I was thinking, what am I doing? Where am I going? And you know, like that. So I remembered, so I thought, well, 197 Dank Street, where is that? So off Albert Parkway, I just said, where is that? You know, helpless sort of, you know, I don't know where it is. So I walked straight up Curford Road. Oh, there's Dank Street. Left or right? Well, I'm on the left side of the road, so I turned left. You know, and what, 100 metres down the corner, I found the gate. You know, the old gate, not this new one. And it had a gold plaque on it. You know, Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir Hare Krishna Temple. So I pushed the heavy door open and came in, and it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. How many of you devotees know Ranuka Sutta? You would know, right? How many know Ranuka Sutta's Prabhupada disciple, right? Quite of an unusual personality. Anyway, so I walked in and there was nobody around, so I walked all the way through the courtyard here and out to the back car park. And there was, this was then before there was a gate on the back. And so Ranuka Sutta had his arc welder there and he was welding it. So he was the first devotee I met when I came in the temple. Not really the first devotee I met. The first devotee I met that day I came into the temple, but also I went to school with Bhakta Prabhu. So and you all know Bhakta Prabhu, of course, here. How could you not in Melbourne? So I went to school with Bhakta Prabhu. He was a couple of years older than me, but he came back and was in year 12 when I was doing year 12 as well. And played basketball with Bhakta and he took me to TM. So anyway, so I knew. So that was my line when I came in. Oh, where's Bert? Is Bert here, you know, sort of thing. Anyway, so he came. So that's how I came. That was the Turubhav anniversary of Johnny Ananda, Jayananda Prabhu. Jayananda, I was thinking Johnny Ananda. Jayananda Prabhu, so they were having. So it was interesting. So then Bhakta came and we were sitting me down to prasad. And then the other thing I remember was Ranuka Sutta, who I'd seen out there with the welder, then bringing in boxes, because we had prasadam over in what is the theatre now. That was the prasadam hall. We used to call it Parampara Hall. Right? And we had prasadam over there. And this used to be the Brahmachari Ashram upstairs. So, yeah, okay. And I remember the other thing I remember was Ranuka Sutta coming in, bringing out boxes and boxes of cauliflower pakoras. Now, at that point, I'd been a raw foodie for about 6 months, you know, or whatever. So, you know, cauliflower pakoras were kind of a shock to the system, but a very delicious one. And then they said, and Bhakta Prabhu gave me some beads and showed me how to chant japa. So, I knew Bhakta had joined the temple because I'd seen him on a Harinam in the city a few months before. So he said, oh, tomorrow is the Sringa Chakidasi, we're having a big festival, so you should come. So I came. And I remember Korma Prabhu gave a class, and then they're in here, and I can remember Makachor playing the Madanga in the Kirtan, and I can remember we went over there and had a play. And Balaram Prabhu was Aranyakashipu, and Kurma was Amaka, and Ushupati was Prahlad, and Puri and Ayodhyadev and Keshava and Aniruddha, not this Keshava we know here, another Keshava. They were all the schoolboys and they had this wonderful play. And then, so after all of that, I was sitting outside here, and Ayodhyadev Prabhu we were discussing so much philosophy like that. They saw me as maybe a bit of a candidate, I don't know. So mercifully they saw something in me and they gave me some attention. So then I remember Balaram Prabhu, he was the president at the time, he sent Aniruddha down to say, to tell Ayodhyadev to let that boy go home, it's late. So then Aniruddha came down and and said, oh, you know, Bernard said yes to God. And Annie Rue was preaching to me also. And he's saying, trying to say, well, why don't you stay? Why don't you stay? And I said, well, I don't have anything. I just have the clothes I stay in. I don't have anything. He goes, we can fix you up. You know, why don't you stay? Why don't you stay? And I'm thinking, no, I've got to go to class in the morning, 9 o'clock, etc. So, so eventually I said, yeah, I have to go. And I got to the back gate. And I said, yeah, I've got to go and see you. I just got to walk home and stuff. And I took 2 steps out into Little Page Street. And I instantly thought, I don't want to be out here. I want to be in there. And I stepped straight back in. So I slept on the floor up there with all the Sankirtan devotees and all brahmacharis and whatever. Got off the Mangaladi the next morning. And the mantra I was hearing was, one day we'll all sing Hare Krishna with them. Pande Guru Sri Charanaravinda. So I was hearing like that, because I had no idea what the Sanskrit mantra was. So I was hearing, because yeah, they've been preaching, everybody's going, you know, like that. So that was my appreciation. So the day before, after Bhakti gave me some beads, I chanted maybe 5 rounds. And then that day, I started chanting 16 rounds when I first came to the temple. Our day after Nishini Chaturdasi.
Thank you.
Anyway, there's more to the story, but that's enough. It's late, I have to have other things. I'm sure other people have other things. Hare Krishna. So was that really important to know about me? Anyway, everybody has their story, right? How Krishna's and their devotees have saved them, brought them. But you know, you know what I think is more important as to why or how we came to the temple, because so many people come and go, right? It's why we stay. So many people come and go. So many people could tell that story or a similar story or their version of that story, you know, from 10, 20, 30 years ago, whenever, whenever. But where are they? So the real story is, why do we stay? Hari Bol. Who you all are. Okay? Let's go to the second. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.